Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's your Don Bradman? A podcast from SBS. In each episode, we'll have a look at champions, athletes, idolized by millions, that you might not know about. The kind of champion or hero next door. Welcome to Who's Your Don Bradman? Welcome to episode one of Who's Your Don Bradman and the story of the great Abebe Bikila. I am joined with my co-host and dear friend Dario Castaldo. How are you, Dario?
I'm fine. I'm great. We're going to Rome, so I'm particularly happy about it.
Yeah, we're going to 1960, though. You were not born.
No, I wasn't. But I haven't been to Rome in a long time, so looking forward to it.
Okay, let's listen to the story of the great man, Abebe Bikila. Abebe Bikila is an African trailblazer, an athlete of historic proportion. He was born on the 7th of August 1932. And history sometimes throws you little hooks like this. It was the day of the Los Angeles Olympic Marathon. But at that time, of course, no one could imagine the impact Bikila would have on the world in that same event, but 28 years later. Bikila was born in the small town of Jato, several hours away from the capital city of Ethiopia, Addis Ababa. His younger years were marred with tumult and violence. His parents divorced before he was four. He and his family, at some point, were forced to flee from the Italo-Ethiopian War. And this will prove a symbol. Bikila grew up on a family farm, spending much of his childhood running barefoot through the difficult and hilly terrain of the remote Ethiopian countryside. All this to mine his family hurt. Fast forward to 1960. The Olympics took place in Rome, in Italy. Bikila arrived in the Italian capital with two recent marathon wins under his belt. He was entirely unknown outside of his home country. He was hardly even considered an underdog for the event. The day prior to the marathon, he purchased a new pair of running shoes, but developed blisters while testing them. With all the extensive training barefoot he did back home, dating back from his youth on the farm, Bikila was at no disadvantage. Running an initially slow race, Bikila shocked the world and pulled ahead on the final stretch in a world record time of 2 hours, 15 minutes and 16 seconds, taking the gold. Importantly, this marked the first gold medal win by a black African in history and firmly established him as a world-class athlete. Bikila would return twice to the Olympics in his career, taking the gold one more time in Tokyo in 1964 and setting another world record a mere 40 days after an appendectomy. He also competed in the Mexico City 1968 Olympic, where, unfortunately, he had to drop out due to a broken leg. He retired from competitive running shortly after with 12 marathon wins, and he returned to his home country as a hero. In 1969, there was civil unrest in the capital, Addis Ababa. Bikila flipped his car to avoid a group of protesting students. The accident left him quadriplegic. Through intensive therapy and surgery, he was able to regain upper body mobility, but he was never to be able to walk or run again. His athletic spirit, however, was still there. A close friend and a trainer of him convinced him to take up sports such as archery for his recovery. And Bikila went on to enter several competitions for disabled athletes, in which he found great success in events including archery, table tennis, and cross-country sleigh riding. He was invited to make an appearance at the 1972 Olympic Games, where he was met with a standing ovation and adoration from the crowd on the marathon podium. Bikila passed away the following year from cerebral hemorrhage, a complication from his car accident several years before. A full day of mourning was declared in Ethiopia, and Bikila was buried with honors. Bikila was never meant to win the gold in Rome. No one knew his name, his entry was practically unnoticed. But by his performance, he ensured his name entered the history books. Bikila shines as a symbol of African excellence and success. And many nations of Africa since then have taken the world of running by storm. Bikila's legacy carries on with his nation, Ethiopia, which now holds the highest gold medal count in the Olympic marathon, with 6. So that was the story of Abebe Bikila. Dario is back with me in this podcast. First of all, Rome, 1960. What do we know about these Olympics in Rome? What was the atmosphere of these Olympics in Rome?
Oh, it was a great atmosphere. 1950s were a wonderful decade, not just for Italy, but for the whole Western Europe, which was destroyed during World War II and later reconstructed also with the financial help from the United States. And Rome was one of the epicenter of this rebirth, identified with the Dolce Vita, you know, the sweet life, which was in the 1960s and was somehow introduced by the 1960 Olympics. At that time, the television, for example, became a popular home appliance in Italian households. And because of this economic boom in the streets, we finally saw a lot of Fiat cars, yeah, all around.
Not the best ones, but okay.
But at the time, they looked like they were really luxurious in terms of what people were used to. So there was a great vibe in Rome for sure about these Olympics. And the man we're going to talk about was one of the very big symbol of it.
Absolutely. So the Olympics were the version before was in Melbourne, 1956, of course, and a grueling marathon as well, won by Alain Mimoun, a French runner, actually. But as Alain Mimoun will be part of our story later on in this series of podcasts because he's got a great history of his own. But we've been talking about Abebe Bikila. What does Abebe Bikila mean today in Italy? Because there is a legacy for Abebe Bikila, even though he's not from Italy.
No, but he's a huge, huge icon. There's a bit of a historical context maybe to be done here because, you know, he was from Ethiopia. Ethiopia is only one of the two countries in Africa who's never been colonized. But technically, he's the only one who's never been colonized, except for two wars with Italy, basically winning both of them. But Italians occupied Ethiopia for a little while. And during that occupation time, they took away a few of the Ethiopian national symbols, one of which in particular was an obelisk. You know, there are many obelisks in the Western world. There's Egyptian obelisk in Paris, there's in New York, there's in London, and there's 10 of them in Italy. Okay. Of course, taken by the Romans. We're talking about 2,000 years prior to this. Whereas this very obelisk was coming from a small town in the north called Aksum, which was the center of a medieval sort of kingdom in Ethiopia. Mussolini and the Italians took that obelisk in 1937, so it was merely 23 years before the Rome Olympics in 1960.
The concrete was barely settled, you know.
Totally. And it was placed there right in the city center where the marathon was going to run nearby. So Ethiopia was a symbol for the whole African continent because it has been the only country that's never been colonized. You know, the Rastafarians, the Bob Marley-esque symbols, you know, they even take the Ethiopian flag, the red, the green and gold.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because that was the country that meant independence for all of them.
All the Rastafari.
And that was the time where all the African nations gradually were getting their independence. In that 1960, it was the case for Congo, for Madagascar, for Senegal, for Mali, for many big nations.
Algeria.
And obviously, he became a symbol for all of this, the freedom.
Let's retrace this actual marathon. It started from a very particular place, and he finished in a very particular place as well. Tell us about this.
Yes. So it started at the footsteps of the famous Marcus Aurelius Equestrian statue, which is located on top of what is called the Capitol Hill, one of ancient Rome's 7 hills. So we are talking about where the city council is, which is in the very heart of Rome, in the square called Piazza
Venezia. So that is the very, very heart of Rome.
Totally. And maybe unlike what we all think, maybe the streets were better then than now. Maybe
okay.
They literally just paved, at least in the very city center, they looked all nice and paved. But at the end of a marathon, 42 kilometers, 195 meters later, he ended up in front of a Colosseum where there's one of these arches, the Arch of Constantine, not far away from the obelisk, less than a kilometer, I would say 500 meters from the famous obelisk, the Ethiopian obelisk.
There is a legend with this obelisk and the race itself because a lot of reports says that he actually made the attack, the winning attack in front of the oblique. This is not true,
no.
But it's a beautiful legend, no?
Absolutely. And never spoil a great story with the truth. That's the thing. So we're not going to say no. We can say he sprinted and technically sealed the victory when he was in the proximity of the obelisk. So that's the moment when he realized, and the whole world realized, that he was about to become the first sub-Saharan athlete to ever win a gold medal at the Olympics, and doing it in the capital of a country that tried to invade his own.
Yeah,
country.
So let's talk about this symbolism, actually. We've got Abebe Bikila. We saw it in a history I spoke about earlier. He was a soldier in the Ethiopian army. We can say he's fought for his country against Italy. Few years down the line, he's running the marathon, winning the marathon in front of Italian eyes, with all these Italian soldiers lighting up the streets for him, because this is a very big symbol as well. So many symbols in this race. How was this received in Italy?
In my opinion, the Italian pride, no, wasn't really affected. No, those military defeats in Africa weren't considered to be open wounds, because first of all, the army that fought those wars were made of very much older previous generation of Italians, and people would not consider a sore spot the loss in a war led by Mussolini's totalitarian nation, which tried to occupy, colonize, invade a foreign one. Whereas Italy in 1960s, as I said, at a totally different vibe.
They had turned the page on this.
Completely turned the page. So,
did they embrace the symbolism? Was it also, maybe I'm extrapolating too much, but was it also another victory against Mussolini?
Maybe not to that extent, but it was surely a nice cleanup of some of the dust that the history had left as a layer on top of the Italy's image. Mm-hmm. in the early 20th century. And so that was also a little bit of washing up of all the bad things that were told about Italy prior to then. But, you know, on top of that, the fact that he won barefoot, that was something that everyone embraced, because, yes, then he became a great symbol of how resilient Africa could be as a continent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the story of him running barefoot, you caught up with a fairly famous Italian author. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Luca Pelosi is actually a writer, a journalist, also an amateur marathon runner. And he told us about all the true story behind Abebe Bikila, because, as I said, it was simplistic to think that the Africans, oh, they can't afford the shoes, that's why he ran barefoot, or that's how he used to run, so for him it's quite easy, whereas that's not the full story. The full story is a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, let's listen to Luca Pelosi on this story.
He's famous for his barefoot run, but he didn't do that because he couldn't buy shoes. He usually trained both with and without shoes. In Rome, his shoes broke. So Niskanen and Abebe bought a pair of new running shoes, but the shoes didn't fit right and Abebe soon developed blisters. Moreover, the coach followed him by car into training and noticed that without shoes, Bikila took 6 extra steps per minute, about 800 steps in a marathon. So they made the most rational choice, running barefoot. He had a green jersey and the number 11. During the first part of the race, even if he's already in the lead of the race, he attracted attention only for the bare feet. He was a practically unknown athlete.
So it was Luca Pelosi on the story of barefoot. I think we're cleaning up a bit the right, the wrongs, and the legend against the truth. Him running barefoot is something that is a legacy. We call him the barefoot runner. He hasn't run barefoot all his life, as we just see. But this significance is huge.
It is huge. The fact that he did it in Rome, it's twice more important, particularly because, yes, as we said, maybe the roads weren't as bad as nowadays in the city center, but it's still not easy. We got to say it was late afternoon, early evening, so it wasn't as warm, as hot as it could have been. But at the same time, running 42 kilometers on asphalt, on concrete, as well as on cobblestone, because they went through one of the main, you know, the saying, old roads lead to Rome.
The main one
is called Via Appia, and that's still, there are parts of that ancient Roman road which still has it. The Roman made it with this big cobblestone, and they're totally uneven. They are uneven and they are sometimes they're wobbly. Once I got stuck on with my car, it wasn't a great experience, I'm telling you. So even just imagine how he could run. And that was towards the end of marathon, around kilometers 35 or so. And being able to run, to keep the pace, to be stable, you know, on that condition, it's really something that might have impressed everyone in an incredible way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that it's also, inverted comma, an old-fashioned win, because he was against runners that were like well-oiled machine. They were trained to a certain time per kilometer. It was really the first few times where marathon running became systemic. This is what marathon running is. But we can say Abebe Bikila, he ran with his barefoot, but he also ran with his heart.
And on top of that, he set the new world record.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's outstanding. Imagine setting the new world record on a marathon at the Olympics without wearing shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. And stay tuned in this podcast because we got a little nugget for you. It's an interview with Abebe Bikila in 1965. That's after his second win in Tokyo and a tough time. It was before the tough time came to him because he had a tough finish, a tough end of life.
Tough beginning. Tough process and tough ending.
He had a tough life, absolutely. Let's talk about this time because he actually won in Tokyo in 1964 after that. But that's a very much a different marathon, although he broke the world record as well.
Again, he set a new world record because the one that he had set in Rome was beaten a couple of times. Then he set again the new world record, this time wearing shoes.
Yeah.
So obviously that wasn't his secret weapon. And to me, that means even more how impressive the accomplishment has been in Rome in 1960. And winning in Tokyo in 1964 made Abebe Bikila the first man to ever win back-to-back marathons in two different consecutive Olympics. And that's also outstanding. Again, we're talking about a man that, was trained according to what were the protocols at the time. So he wasn't a machine himself. Mm-hmm. He just turned himself into a machine somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. He was just running a marathon a day. The legend is he was running a marathon a day when he was younger. Imagine that. If we talk about the legacy itself, what has Abebe Bikila left? We go back to Luca Pelosi. He tells us about this legacy of Abebe Bikila in the history of the sport.
I think that his legacy will endure forever. In the famous movie The Marathon Man, Dustin Hoffman in his bedroom has a poster with the image of Bikila. Bikila is always present in Rome. The municipality has decided to title the street. Many fast Ethiopian runners want to run in Rome and they often win the Rome Marathon. In 2010, the winner, Siraj Jena, took off his shoes upon his arrival at the Colosseum and ran the last few meters barefoot. Tusa, the winners of 2016 Rome Marathon, in 2017, instead of wearing the bib number 1 as champion, wanted the number 11 as a tribute to Bikila. The National Center of Contemporary Art organized an exhibition titled Freedom of Movement, from Abebe Bikila to Migration.
So again, there was Luca Pelosi, your colleague, your Italian colleague, about the legacy. Today, in the marathon running world, is it just a legendary name, Abebe Bikila?
First of all, his legacy is in the path he paved for fellow Ethiopians and Eastern African athletes in general on a sporting level. Ethiopian athletes overall won a total of 55 medals, all long-distance events in athletics. They won 4 golds in Sydney, 4 golds in Tokyo. They've had legends like Haile Gebrselassie and Kenenisa Bekele. And they gradually also saw a generation of women in sports competing at the highest level. They had Fatuma Roba, the first African woman to win a marathon at the Olympics in Atlanta in 1996. They had Tirunesh Dibaba, which still holds the world record on 5,000 meters. As for his legacy in Italy, Abebe Bikila's name is linked to a race which was created in Rome in recent times.
Which goes back to the actual marathon road.
Exactly, and particularly over that Via Appia, that famous ancient Roman road. That's where he set the attack. That's basically when he won the marathon. So his name is very popular in Italy, extremely popular in Italy. And in terms of legacies, the obelisk of Aksum, has been returned to Ethiopia in 2003, exactly, under Berlusconi's government.
Okay.
Fancy that.
I like how you said Berlusconi.
From Mussolini to Berlusconi, there was some sort of connection.
But there's actually a funny link. But you're right, the obelisk was returned. The end of life, we just mentioned it for Abebe Bikila. He got into a car accident, a car that actually was given to him by the Ethiopian government after such a success. But his car was overturned in a corner, and then he had quite a massive car crash, and he was left in a wheelchair. He did carry on a bit of sport because he did archery, and he actually competed in what was going to become the Paralympics. He wasn't the Paralympics at the time, but he did compete well as well.
Yeah, he was probably, very talented as a sportsman overall, and obviously resilient, as we said. Many people thought that he would have died in the car accident, where he survived. Mm-hmm. Not just that, he kept on playing sports on a very high level, but still his life kept on being harder and harder.
Yeah, and he died of a brain hemorrhage. Today he's buried in Addis Ababa, and his place of burial is a bit of a pilgrimage site for everyone that goes to Ethiopia and every runner that wants to make the journey. You've been to Ethiopia, Dario. Dario, as a slight fact, because we will talk about this around this podcast, Dario has been in far too many countries. That's okay. How many?
150-something.
Okay, he's been in 150-something countries in the world. Most of us didn't know.
UN recognized, because, there's a lot of controversies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some are not.
It's like when this guy sent me a postcard from North Korea. I'm blacklist.
Not supposed to say
that. I'm probably blacklisted or redlisted somewhere now by the North Korean post office. But anyway, you've been to Ethiopia. What can you tell us about how Abebe Bikila today is remembered in Addis Ababa and in Ethiopia?
Well, as we mentioned, his tomb is a bit of a pilgrimage site for local and runners taking pictures, etc. It's located outside the church, the St. Joseph Church, and it's decorated with a bronze statue from which you can kind of tell how skinny and tiny he was. We haven't really expanded on that, but Abebe Bikila was 57 kilos. Otherwise, he would have maybe not been able to set a world record winning a marathon barefoot. But I mean, beyond Addis Ababa, he's a global icon, a figure that goes beyond Rome 1960s, beyond the marathon, beyond the Olympic Games, and possibly even beyond Ethiopia and Africa, although he's been the first sporting legend coming from that part of the world.
He was very much at the beginning of it.
Totally, and he set a very high bar, winning 2 consecutive gold medals in one of the toughest of all competitions.
Yeah, absolutely. To conclude this podcast, I would just advise you to go onto YouTube and some of the sharing platforms to have a look at this amazing story, Abebe Bikila. There's plenty of histories around him. And have a look at the 1960 marathon. It's available on YouTube.
You don't have to watch the whole 2 hours and 15 minutes, roughly.
There's a good 20-minute summary of it, but it tells you and he showed the footage of the time and what a time, especially this image of Abebe Bikila running the last few meters where all the guards are actually lighting up the street because there's no public lighting on those roads, and the military lighting up the road of him just to success. It was fantastic. Thank you, Dario Castello, to have joined us on episode 1 of Who's You Don't Brandman.
You're welcome, Christophe.
And as promised, to conclude, I want to leave you with some few words, rare words, from the man himself, Abebe Bikila. Thank you for joining us. This was episode 1 of Who's Your Don Bradman on SBS. See you next time.
My sporting debut was in Rome. These Olympic Games gave me the idea to become an athlete. Before, I wasn't thinking about it. I think I'm just an ordinary man. I'm not physically superior. I'm a man exactly like everyone else. A real athlete has one motivation, win. And in Rome, I had this motivation. I didn't care if I was in Italy or elsewhere, and my joy wasn't bigger because it was in front of an Italian crowd. My country has always showed their love for me, and I'm very proud of being Ethiopian, and I'm certain this will never change. Ethiopia will not forget me.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organization a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.